This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector. Investigative conversations about issues that impact our lives. Be curious. Friday mornings at 9 a.m. only on 101.9 High FM.
And yes, of course, here it is. This is The Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector. And today's guest is the playwright, Gail Lowe. She's from South Africa, but she's lived in Britain for many years, off and on, her plays. She's a playwright, obviously, because she has plays. And her plays have been performed in this country, in Britain, in Australia, in America. And there's a long list of these plays, too long, in fact, for me to mention them all. But I would add that one of them was here not so very long ago, Blonde Poison. And just because she's a playwright doesn't mean she doesn't do other things. She also has a degree, and I'm trying to scroll down to where it says what it is. It's a field I've never heard of before. Let me get to it. What is this?
Can I help you?
You're going to have to, because suddenly my material just disappeared into the ether. She has a PhD in some extraordinary field I've never heard of before.
Organizational informatics. And you know what? I stopped hearing about it at that point when I finished it, because I never worked in it.
Well, I didn't know what it was. So I just figured it dealt with the mass aggregation of data, trying to draw appropriate policy-related inferences.
Oh, my God.
Not at all, huh?
Oh, much more interesting than it really was. I should have done that PhD. That would have been fun. Huh. No, I mean, it was very much about the NHS, and it was how the organization of the NHS uses information. And it was quite an anti-computer thing. It was more about the importance of people communicating and, you know, human-centered approaches and so on. So, yeah. We can easily leave that topic.
give us back our pens and burn those Whole Earth cards. Okay. Oh, good. But the reason why we're talking to Gail is that her new play about the redoubtable figure of Albie Sachs has just opened at the Theater on the Square. And I would add, it, as far as I understand, this is a one-person play, and you have an extraordinary cast of one. Graham Hopkins, who, I'm an old guy, and I remember Graham Hopkins playing Cecil John Rhodes on television 20-some years ago. Gosh. And he has been in all films, television, stage, very well-known man. And the director, Fiona Ramsey, who we interviewed not so very long ago, and she was in the play Blonde Poison. So this is really kind of an intimate circle.
And shall I give you another fact to make it even more intimate?
Please.
She is actually my sister-in-law, an ex-sister-in-law, actually. But yeah, I was married to her brother.
All right, so that's really close run. Now, this play by the time you hear this broadcast, I will have seen it, but I haven't seen it yet because it only opened on Thursday. Preview was on Wednesday. It opens on Thursday, and then here we are Friday morning talking about the play, and I'll pretend I've seen it. It's about the very redoubtable figure of former Constitutional Court Justice Albie Sachs, who is a well-known figure, obviously, in South Africa, not just simply because of the unfortunate circumstances of his near death, by virtue of his intellectual interest and broad-ranging engagement in the law, in arts, in any number of things. And I remember a panel where he was introducing a new dance work, and he was describing his early adulthood life, where there was a big party, and he said, we danced all night. Something you don't especially expect to hear from a constitutional court justice.
Yeah. Is absolutely.
So how did you come to this? Please. This is your program. How did you come to the idea that you would do a play based on his speeches, his writings, his utterances, his feelings? Why Albie Sachs and why now?
So it's a bit of a story, but I was on the way to Israel because I had a play that was going to be on there about Avram Sutzkever, the Yiddish poet. And as I was looking at my phone and you know, scrolling and so on, I saw a post from Ishmael Mohammed, who said, Albie Sachs is going to be 90, and there really does need to be a play about him and his son and his father. If you're interested, let me know. So I wrote and said that I was interested. I don't know if I was the only one. I don't imagine I was the only one, because, you know, Albie is such an interesting person, and there's such devotion to him. But nevertheless, I did get the part, the role of the gig, I should say. I got the gig to write a play about him. And I did. It was based on his book, The Soft Vengeance of a Freedom Fighter. And I read the book and I absolutely, quite honestly, I just fell in love with him as a person. He writes with such sense of kind of an understanding of himself, of self-deprecation, you know, not taking himself seriously enough and yet taking himself very seriously. Everything that's wonderful about the human being, really, I'm a great fan of Albie Sachs, but everything that is great about a human being is found in Albie Sachs. He's a wonderful person. Anyway, so I wrote it based on it, and it's as it was supposed to, as the kind of the message was that it was to do with fathers and sons. And I knew about Solly Sachs because Solly Sachs was a great hero of my father. He was a great trade unionist, Solly Sachs, of course. And the son was just, you know, he was he was very young. And I just wrote it as I would have imagined him to be. And I sent it to Ishmael Mohammed when I finished. I finished really quickly. And Ishmael wrote back and said, "This is absolutely beautiful. I can see it on in Cape Town." And in fact, it was such a lovely message that I sent it to my dramaturg that I work with a lot. And I said to him, "Yeah, look at this. This is a learning experience for you, how to respond to my plays." I was so pleased. And then, of course, I sent it to Albie with a great deal of optimism. And Albie said, "This isn't at all about Oliver, his son. This has nothing to do with him. You don't know Oliver." And he said, "If you're prepared to work with me on it, then we can carry on. Otherwise, Shalom Aleichem," basically. Anyway, and that's what we did. And it took, and of course, because Albie's so busy, it took quite a few sessions of Zoom sessions of sitting together, working through things, him telling me lots of stories, him telling me about Oliver and a lot about himself and a lot, and also about Solly, because I didn't know much about him. So every 3, 4 months, 5 months even, we'd meet for these marathon Zoom sessions and go through the play, and there'd be lots and lots of changes. And this went on, and it really took 2 years. And then Albie said, oh no, in fact, it was much closer to 3. And then Albie had told me a lot about Oliver. I had a much better understanding of him. And he was he is a complex person. He's a wonderful person and very intelligent person. But he's got his own challenges and, you know, and complexes because of the situation of being so young with a much, much older father. And, you know, anyway, so he brought me over to Cape Town last November 2024. And we sat together and really kind of listened to Oliver, listened to his whole story, agreed with, you know, I wrote down exactly what he said. And then took it away again and you know, redrafted it again. And then Oliver finished matric, and he did a, you know, kind of took a gap year and actually came and stayed with us in Brighton for a month. And towards the end of that time, we did a Zoom with Albie, and he finally said, "That's it. It's, we can go." And that was May last year. So it's all taken an awfully long time. It was needed. This time was needed to really understand the people involved in this.
Well, sometimes the gestation for something like that does take time. I mean, you don't just dash it off and then, you know, send it away to get printed and just go from there in 3 weeks, usually. Maybe when something cooks quite this long, maybe that's the better way, because all the bad bits are burned out and all the good bits are improved. I'm always intrigued by one person plays because they have a tendency to be either monologues or soliloquies, almost just, you know, one person saying stuff, or it's one person trying, one actor trying to be many people on the stage at the same time. Making the audience envision or imagine that there are multiple characters when in fact there's just one person talking.
Yes, and absolutely. I mean, I've got a theory about one-person plays, and I've done quite a few. And I mean, apart from one or two where there is kind of contact with the audience, the way they actually do talk to the audience, my feeling is that you need to understand who they're talking to, and they're not talking to us, the audience. They're talking to, I mean, like in Blonde Poison, she's talking to all sorts of people. She's talking to her mother, to these Gestapo people, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and if you're just telling the audience a story, all it is storytelling, and it's not drama. But that's my theory, and I know that a lot of people won't agree with me. But the thing with this LB play is I actually wrote two versions. I wrote a one-man show, and I wrote one with five actors and lots of characters. And when you were describing the differences, the latter one is the one that is true for this play. I mean, it's always Elby, but he uses the words of other people to tell the story and take it forward. I think it really does work extremely well. But so, as I say, it was either five actors taking multiple roles or one person. And Fiona decided, and Elby as well, that they wanted the one-person show. I wasn't sure, but they decided that that's what they wanted.
We're going to take a quick ad break. This is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, here on Chi FM. And we're talking with Gail Lowe about her play, which is just opened at the Theater on the Square in Sandton, play about Alby Sachs, the former Constitutional Court Justice, his relationship to son and to father, and to all things in between. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and my guest today, Gail Lowe, author, I guess in parentheses we might say, in conjunction with the main character or the character of the her new play about Justice Alby Sachs, which is now on at the Theater on the Square. And we're talking about the way in which a one-person play is created and the voicing and to whom that one character is talking to or with or about. And you had a slight put down of storytelling, except that I tend to think that one person plays are always about storytelling.
Of course, plays are storytelling, and it shouldn't be a put down. It's simply a different genre. You know, if you're telling people a story, this is what happened, this is what happened, this is what happened, that's telling a story. If it's a piece of drama, it's used in a different way. And it's much more nuanced, and it's much more demanding on the intellect of the audience, because they have to be there. They have to absolutely focus entirely on where you're going with that, what's happening, who's she talking to, or he, you know, what is the background, what are those other people that are on the stage but not present, thinking and feeling and so on. It's a more demanding way of presenting a play. But you know what? Honestly, a lot of people would disagree. I have to accept that.
I have this vision of Cro-Magnon man sitting around a campfire, and in whatever language they use to describe things, a child turns to an elder, a graybeard of the age of about 35 or something, and says, tell me a story. And that's the beginning of storytelling, of literature, of drama. And this is how we begin to understand the gods and demons in the universe, and how we understand how people behave or misbehave, because some guy is some sort of Homer-like character is telling this story.
Absolutely. I entirely agree with you, and it is and it's all about storytelling. you know, the Elby play is telling the story of Elby, his father and his son, and a lot more, of course. Absolutely. It's storytelling, but with more intense.
Some people may not realize that Elby Sachs was instrumental in creating the artistic architecture of the Constitutional Court and the collection of the court's art, which is an important part of the story, of the message of the court itself. And he worked with donors and artists and sponsors and supporters even before the building existed to create this, this collection. And I think most of the material tends to illustrate questions or concepts that relate to the kinds of things that the Constitutional Court is supposed to adjudicate and decide upon. But there's even yet another side to him, which many people may not have realized. Back in the late 1980s, early 1990s, the question of cultural and sports and intellectual boycotts of South Africa were prominent. And the question of the purpose, art and drama, was an issue. Should it be deliberately designed only to support the political and social change, or should it tell its own stories and its own lessons? And Albie was one of those people who stepped forward and said, it's time that art should be free to tell whatever it has to
say. Amazing. Really interesting.
Now, this play that you have constructed with the assistance of the living main character, we need to emphasize, this is not about somebody who's long gone in the history books. This is somebody who's walking the earth with the rest of us. And when you created this work, did you have in mind foibles, disappointments, mistakes, as opposed to simply hagiography?
Do you know, I mean, it absolutely isn't a hagiography, because nothing to do with Elby is hagiographic, I have to say. But the most important thing that I haven't said yet, and I really need to emphasize, is this is all Elby's words. Everything that's on the play, it's Elby's and Oliver's words. It's not mine. I shaped it and I made it into a play, but it was absolutely taken from his book and from all these, you know, Zoom meetings that we had, these interviews and the face-to-face interviews and hearing what they said. And even when there was something of myself in it, and I'll give you an example, it was taken out. So when I was little and I woke up with a nightmare or something like that, my mother used to come and say, just imagine you're licking an ice cream. And I found that very comforting. I have a bit of a relationship with ice cream, but that's beside the point. And when Elby came across that, he said, no, my mother didn't say that. And that was it. Out it went. So there's nothing of me in it. There's only me as the kind of, the person making it happen by writing it. But it's all Elby's words and Oliver's, of course. Have I answered your question? So I can't quite remember how I got to that. Yeah?
You have, in effect, because my question evolved out of the question whether it was a hagiography or whether it was, you know, were disappointments and miscues and mistakes also woven into the text.
That is really important, because it absolutely is. And that's what makes Elby so human. Because there's, and that when I mentioned self-deprecation, that's precisely the issue, you know, that he could look at himself and see himself in, being ridiculous and being annoyed with himself or accepting himself and his, you know, his limitations. So it's a real warts and all story, because that's what he is. There's no veneer with him. There's no sense of, this is the wonderful Elby Sachs, and that's all you're going to see. It's not like that at all. It's very real, very human.
I think a lot of people, when they hear the name Elby Sachs, they think of the first thing that comes to their mind is this nodal point was, quite frankly, the assassination attempt in Mozambique and the near death that resulted from it. And famous or stroke infamous photographs of that moment in time, as opposed to all these other sides of the man. But does that particular moment fit into this work as well?
Yeah.
Or is it there just sort of allusion or offhand comment? How does that work for you?
I don't know. It absolutely. I mean, it really starts with that, you know. It starts with a bomb, and you get a real sense of what happened, and you know, and even for example, we hear the people that are talking to him, you know, and Evo, who is you know, one of the revolutionaries in Mozambique at the time, saying things like you'll be all right, and realizing that, you know, that he's being looked after by the people that he trusts, you know, because obviously it was an apartheid-led bomb, you know, and he was worried that he was being taken away by the South Africans, but in fact he was looked after by Frelimo, and for that he was extremely pleased about that. Within that state of you know, of extreme trauma that he was going through at the time. But also, just carrying on with this idea of getting a sense of, you know, the warts and all, the real LB. I mean, he describes a lot about being in a bath. You know, he's being in a bath, and there's a nurse who's there with him, supporting him. And he has to try and get out. And he just makes such a mess of it and falls. And it's so embarrassing and humiliating. And he's so, you know, he doesn't just kind of brush that aside. He goes into it. We kind of really get a sense of how he's feeling, what it really means to struggle to that extent. And also with Oliver, you know, Oliver was a little boy, and they went for a walk down to a lake, and it was slippery. And instead of Albie, the father, helping the little boy, it was the little boy who had to help the father, and how he felt about that. He felt he was angry, and he was kind of he felt awful. Oliver was angry that he had to help his father rather than his father had to help him. And all of these kind of real issues are explored in the play. So yeah, going back to the word hagiography, it absolutely is not that. That's for sure.
We are talking with Gail Lowe, the shaper, I guess, I think, is the creator, the molder of the life of Isaac and his relationship to father and son. It's now running at the Theater on the Square in Sandton. It stars, well, the only actor on stage really is. And he's a notable presence in theater and film and television in this country and abroad, and directed by Fiona Ramsey, well-known as well. And this is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and my guest, of course, Gail Lowe. And we'll be back after these messages. This is High FM. Stay tuned.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive, and I'm your host as usual, Brooke Spector, is on High FM. And my guest today, Gail Lowe, as we've said. Gail, playwright, work has appeared on stages in the U.S., in Britain, Australia, Africa, other countries, been translated into various other languages. The new play is about Albie Sachs, his relationship with his son, with his father. One actor, Graham Hopkins, directed by Fiona Ramsey, and the play is on, it's now running at the Theater on the Square in Sandton. And by the time you hear this, I will have seen it, but not yet, because it hasn't, at the moment of our recording, it's only going to go into previews this evening. But here it is, you're listening on Friday morning, so the play is on, so get your tickets and go see it. That's the commercial message on behalf of Daphne Kunt, who runs the Theater on the Square. Let me go back, Gail, to the work itself. You've created a stage of multiple characters using one actor, memory or in recollection. I like the idea that you have included the difficulty, the annoyance, the anger with being unable to do certain things, getting out of a bath easily, doing a walk on a slippery walkway. When my late father was still alive in Florida, I went to visit him. And you know how it is with parents, they always grab the check in a restaurant, right? And then there is that moment when the tug of war over the check, you win the check. And what that means is you have won it forever. And that is that's a moment of a decisive turn in life.
Yes.
And
yes, absolutely.
Does your play give us these dynamics, the turns, the twists, the moments of that? I hear you. That's it.
Well, you know, I actually can't relate massively to that in terms of the play. I can as a person, as a mother and as grandmother and so on, but not so much in the play. I mean, the thing is that Albie in the play is always an adult, you know, and in a sense, we don't see Solly as much as hear from him. That's his father. Yeah, sorry. And when Albie was six, he got a postcard from his father. His father was away a lot. And his father said, may you grow up to be a great, you know, revolution, a great soldier for freedom. And he kind of, you know, thinks about it. This is a theme that kind of comes up twice, quite a lot, that he would never say that to his son. May you grow up to be a great soldier for freedom, you know, because he doesn't believe that. It puts quite a kind of burden on the shoulders of a young child to be told, may you grow up to be a great soldier for freedom. So we don't really get an enormous sense of Solly, but he's there, and he's there saying certain things to Albie, you know, as he runs on the beach, sort of at the end when he feels he's, you know, he's kind of reached that point where he can go running on the, did I say fields? I meant the beaches of Cape Town, you know, Clifton. And it's a very special moment for him to have reached that stage when he's able to do that. And I can tell you, Albie himself is incredibly, not only resilient, but physically so. Because when I was there with him, I have just a little silly story, but I had to get an Uber, you know, and you know what it's like with an Uber, you get it and you have to go as soon as they arrive. And in fact, I phoned because I needed Wi-Fi, you know, coming from England and so on. So I was at his house. I got hold of the Uber. They were right outside anyway. So I said, right, Albie, I have to run. And Albie lives down a whole mass of stairs going up to the top because he's overlooking the sea, you know. And I ran up and he said, I'm coming to, and he ran after me. And I mean, I'm about 20 years younger than him, but you know, he was there just as quickly as me, and absolutely, you know, he was absolutely wonderful and gave me an enormous hug, and it was really very special. I don't always feel so massively warm towards people I write about, but I certainly do about Albie. Very special man.
I mean, your list of plays, or that's not quite the right word. Your life of play writing seems, as I understand it, to speak to people with issues, with problems, with difficulties that they surmount or don't quite surmount, and the struggle they have in trying to figure out how they're going to climb that mountain successfully.
Flawed characters. I always talk about them as flawed characters. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's what attracts me most to, you know, writing about it. You know, you want to, I mean, like, for example, Blonde Poison, and Fiona's in Blonde Poison. She's actually going to be in, there's a double bill of Blonde Poison and my play Rika's Room, which is based on my mother, in London at the Tabard Theatre for a month in July. And you know, I mean, Fiona's brilliant, but there's been quite a few productions, but she's a particularly wonderful actress. But there's an example of an incredibly flawed character. And there's also an interesting thing there that I always thought of her, Stella Goldschlag, who was a Jew and was arrested by the Gestapo and turned and started working for the Gestapo, but extremely enthusiastically. And she was, you know, they say that she betrayed up to 3,000 Jews. And my attitude about her was always that she's a monster. And I was very surprised after the first few kind of performances when we had Q&As and people said to me, I had such empathy for her. I really felt for her. And I thought, what? How could you? She's a monster. And but that's the thing. As a playwright, I don't tell people what to think. You know, I let people think for themselves in these things.
Well, maybe create a monster with great sympathy. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and my guest today, Gail Lowe, play about Albie Sachs, is now on at the Theater on the Square in Sandton. It will be on for a number of weeks, but it has just started. This is the Deep Dive. Please don't touch that dial. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is the Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector on IFM, and my guest is Gail Lowe, the creator, the shaper, the molder of the new play at the Theater on the Square about Albie Sachs and about Albie's father and his son and this relationship or set of relationships and the disappointments and healings and all the other things. What is it that attracts you to flawed characters? I mean, I realize that most dramas that we've all seen, most dramas are not simply triumphal marches to the end of things. Every really, really good drama, unless it's a comedy or a farce, every drama's got a character who has flaws. Otherwise, there'd be no crisis, there'd be no catharsis, there'd be no way to end it. I mean, Hamlet would have just solved everything and taken over the Denmark and gotten rid of the bad guys and told those people from Poland to go home and be done with it. But he didn't because he was flawed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the answer, isn't it? I mean, for example, my mother's sister, my aunt, lived on Kibbutz Dot Yam in Israel. And I mean, she was one of the kind of, you know, the veterans of that kibbutz, and she's no longer alive. And of course, Sdot Yam is very famous because it was the home of Hannah Senech, you know, the great heroine and poet, and a wonderful, wonderful character. And somebody said to me, "Oh, you must write a play about Hannah Senech." And to me, there was nothing really to write. And of course, a lot of other people would be very happy to write a play about Hansa. This is just me we're talking about and my kind of foible or way of thinking. But the subject is only interesting to me if there is a struggle or if there is an aspect of their life that is so kind of unpleasant, monstrous, difficult, challenging. And they kind of and how they react to it, how they behave on the basis of you know, having that impairment or impediment or challenge or whatever it is. And that's what is interesting. I mean, for example, I've never written about myself because I reckon I'm too sane, in brackets, boring. I don't think I'm boring, but the reality is that unless you've got real issues, it's not that interesting to other people. I don't want to live a life with issues and challenges and problems and insanity. Thank God I'm just, you know, the sort of person that lives a very happy and fulfilled life. But it's not something that's interesting for other people. And I understand that.
I do. I mean, I'm thinking of all, putting comedy aside, but I'm thinking of all the dramas or dramatic works that I like and have seen more than once because I like them so much or have read them or watched film versions of them or whatever. Part of the I don't want to say the joy, but the understanding comes as the character reveals one more layer of that onion and you discover that there's some rough edges there and there are some flaws.
Yeah.
And there are some problems, and there are some misshapen bits, and By the time you get to the end of things, oh boy, so much has been revealed. And I like your question about the main character in Blonde Poison. Yes, of course the woman was horrible, but that's the dramatic joy in it, that you got to see how that happened.
I mean, you have to understand that in Blonde Poison, she asks a couple of things that are particularly important. One is she asks the questions, what would you have done? And that is a very pertinent question to anybody, in a situation like that. And my response to her is that there were a lot of people in your situation who didn't do that. You know,
sure.
they took it on the nose or whatever the expression is, and they didn't do that. And they were killed rather than, than being responsible for 3,000 deaths. But the other thing is, and this is the bit that people really, felt empathetic towards her about. And she said she did it for her parents, to save her parents. And the reality is that even after her parents died, and they were sent off to Auschwitz as well, even though for a while she protected them from that. But even after they were gone, she carried on. So, it would be a really interesting debate with somebody who kind of could sympathize and empathize with Stella Goldschlag, and me, who just thinks, straight out, she's a monster. She's a monster and I hate her.
Read some things about camp capos who did what they did because it saved them or it saved their friends or their family or whatever it is at the cost of others who were not therefore saved or helped or aided. When I go back and thinking in my own mind that there was a moment when I first started, well, before I started working for the U.S. government, this is in the middle of the Vietnam War, and the exam of the people, whether I'd be hired or not, basically asked me, well, what do you think about the Vietnam conflict? Now, this is that moment where you have to, you got to put your cards on the table. You really have to say something.
Yeah.
You have to act upon that. And I sometimes wonder how different it would have been if I'd said, oh, I think it's a great idea. Let's keep going. As opposed to it's dreadful. I'm in the military reserve and I'm not going if they send me. There's a little moment of dramatic tension in my mind. Okay, is it A or is it B? And where do I go with this? And what unravels as a result of it? That's not the same order of being a concentration camp inmate, policeman or woman, but the moral dilemma is always there, I think, for people who are doing anything besides, just existing.
And that just reminds me of that amazing book and film, The Reader, do you remember? Yeah. I actually can't remember the bloke's name, but and she was a concentration camp guard, and when it unravels exactly where her initial problems were and what she was covering up, it just makes it, I mean, there you really can sympathize with her, and that's what makes it such a great book and also film, I have to say. But I mean, there's so many brilliant films to do with the Holocaust and that we see all the time, and I'm constantly kind of I had a play that opened up on the 5th of May in London, at the White Bear Theatre in Kennington, called Ashes and Diamonds, and it's about a 102-year-old woman who has just died, and she was a refugee. She didn't go through the concentration camps, but she was a refugee at that time, starting off in Poland, had to get out of Poland, went to Antwerp, had to get out of Antwerp, and so on and so forth. And this whole period, that whole period of the 20th century, is something that draws me time and time again. The fact is that my own mother's parents were killed in the war. I mean, they were murdered in Minsk in 1942, and my mother got out before the war started and went to live in Israel, then Palestine, of course, for 10 years. So, I mean, all of that is something that I bring into all of my, most of my plays have got something to do with that. Not all, but the ones that really kind of, you know, pull me back. And my play, Rika's Rooms, is not only about all of that sort of period, but the current period, because my mother suffered from dementia. So there was this the present of dementia and the past, which was the coherent bit of what she did in the war and afterwards and so on. So it's very interesting, all of that.
We have to take our final ad break. This is the Deep Dive. This is Brooke Spector. And my guest today, Gail Lowe, creator of the play, and the author of so many others. This one about Albie Sachs and his relationship with father and son on at the Santon Theater on the Square. We'll be right back after this message, and we'll have some final words from Gail.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive. As you know, I'm your host, Brooke Spector. My guest, Gail Lowe, playwright, new play, has opened at the Theater on the Square. It's about Albie Sachs, somebody that so many of us know, appreciate, and have immense regard for the many different things he has done and the way in which he surmounted what could have easily been irrevocable personal tragedy and went on to many new adventures in his career. Gail, what are you working on next? I know that's probably a private kind of question, and we only have a minute or two. But if you can, if you can deliver that in a, you know, in a tiny capsule, tell me what you're doing next.
Well, I've got two plays that have been written and that producers and so on are trying to get on, and they're really exciting as well. One is about the LGBT ban in the armed forces in the UK, and how people took the UK to the European Court of Human Rights to protest against it, and then the ban was overturned. So that's one play, and another one is going back to the Antarctic, because my play Shackleton's Carpenter is really well known and has been around a long time. And this is a different one. This is to do with one of the people that were with Scott in the Antarctic. So very, very different from what we've been talking about up to now. But at the moment, at the very moment, I've got a great big book waiting for me to get into, and that's all about Mussolini. And this is a play for that's going to be done at the Playground Theatre, which I'm associated with as an associate artist. And the owner and director there is Peter Tate, and it's a play for him. So I have to get my head around all of that, and it's not something I know much about.
That is very different from where this play takes us, and it's obviously rather different from where so many of the other works that you have done have taken us over. We have been speaking with Gail Lowe, playwright, thinker about the frailties of humans and the mistakes they make, what it meant inevitably. I would have liked to talk about your theory of tragedy, but we didn't get to that point, and I'm afraid we actually have run out of time. This is The Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and our guest, as I say, Gail Lowe, the new play at the Theater on the Square, all about Albie Sachs and his father and his relationship there and relationship with his son. Go see it. It's on now. Gail, thank you very much for joining us, and my listeners,
thank you very much.
Be safe, have a good weekend, and we'll be back next week. I'm not going to tell you what next week's topic is. I like to surprise people. We do everything from nuclear physics to theater, and it's always fun, and I learn and I enjoy, and I hope you do too.